Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Okay, I don't know if this is true, but I read online about a woman that hadn't done it in so long that her vagina closed up.
What?
Get out of here!
I swear to God,
it grew back together.
Wait, was it ever one piece?
What?
Ew,
no, she had to have a vaginoplasty.
Ouch!
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I'm John.
I'm Sammy.
And I'm Joseph.
And this week, I'm sad. Because my quarterback got eliminated today.
Well, after what you did to me yesterday, I don't feel bad for you because...
Look, I just want
for
you to
our
know...
listeners... Our co-host attempted to make me have an emotional breakdown in a public location, specifically Target.
Yeah, and I swore I could have heard you crying from my apartment.
Your co-host cared enough about your mental state and well-being to make sure you were okay. That's how I'm spinning it.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be like, oh, what is that? Oh, I'm trying to think of what it is. It's like every time a, it's like the, okay, so you know, it's like the opposite of every time a bell rings, the angel gets its wings. You know, the opposite of that, every time there's a retirement rumor, a Sammy cry can be heard.
Yep.
With a, followed by a scream.
Yep. Well, as of today, nothing is confirmed with your quarterback, and my quarterback is on his way back to, you know, Missouri, where he will, you know, hang out with his athlete wife, their kid, and his Whataburger franchise that he bought for in a completely different state. I think he's going to be okay.
Like a tough
saying.
Life.
I know.
Well, he probably needs to go home and take care of his home life because his wife's getting a whole lot of hate right now. So,
okay, you might want to explain on something I don't know.
Oh, I feel very bad for him because as beloved of a quarterback as he is, and here's the thing, don't get me wrong, I feel bad for him in the sense of like, you know, that's his family. So no one should come after his family, but people hate, and I mean legitimately hate his wife or fiance and his brother. They absolutely cannot stand them. They come after them all the time. Most recently for her showering the fans with champagne in like 2-degree weather or whatever, which I didn't think was that big of a deal, but people just eviscerated her for it. And I'll be honest, she doesn't have the best response on social media. She kind of tends to throw fuel on the fire, and she said a lot of things she shouldn't.
So she's just again 2022.
Right.
And his brother doesn't have the best presence either, but yeah, it's still.
But anyway, we're not doing surviving sports flicks, at least not yet. But this
coming
week
soon?
We... Huh?
Coming soon, though.
Maybe. We're waiting for a vacancy in the schedule. February. This one's going to happen, unlike the whole Heichelpocalypse thing. But anyway, we're not talking about Katherine Heigl or a sports movie this week. Sammy picked this week, and what did you have us watch?
It's complicated. Our second foray into Nancy Meyers' world.
Look, I know it's complicated, but you can give us the name of the movie. Yeah.
This is where John inserts the cricket sounds.
No, that's more work.
You can
I'm,
just
I'm a lazy man, Roger.
What was the first one that we did of hers?
The Holiday, which you I hadn't on come on board yet. Yeah.
No.
I don't know if I survived or not, so I can't tell you.
Well, the Holiday will probably be coming up later in the conversation, not on the schedule. We're not going back. We're not Bill Simmons, and this movie wasn't Heat, so we're not doing three episodes devoted to it.
Yeah, we have not been doing this long enough to cover any movie a second time yet.
No. Oh, and also, I don't know if I necessarily want to, especially not last week's movie.
Oh, come on. You
yeah,
know
that, no.
It deserves
Joseph mentions out. That movie again, he's fired.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, I do have good news. They are making a Mortal Kombat 2 for the new ones, so we're actually going to have a good Mortal Kombat 2 movie, whether how bad it is or not. It can't be worse than that one.
Oh, don't give them ideas. You know, don't make this a challenge to them.
I had PTSD making the promo for this episode, for last week's episode.
Yeah.
Did you just kind of get into a depressive state when you just saw the logo come up and you're just like, oh man, come on.
I didn't even watch it as I was making the promo. I was like, I don't care how much of this, I don't care if the edit even makes sense. It's just going to be a promo. I'm not going to watch it. And there you go, people.
Well, you know, if it didn't make sense, it's appropriate for the movie.
This is also true. If it didn't make sense, no one would know.
No, they wouldn't.
So. But thank God we moved on to somebody who can write movies.
This is true. And we'll get into a little bit of other movies she wrote. But first, why don't we play the trailer and then get into the discussion before I somehow manage to derail this into a third diversion before we even get into the main topic of the show.
You look good, Janie.
Yeah.
You do. You always do. Your hair's shorter.
Longer.
I like it.
It's getting to the point.
Knowing how to be divorced is next to impossible.
Not that I want him back.
Of course not.
He cheated on you. Your 20-year marriage ends.
And then he marries her. Sometimes it
hurts. Joe, you are so lucky Jerry is dead.
Thank you.
You don't have to bump into him.
Oh, that's true.
My marriage is not turning out as I hoped. She's got me booked at the fertility center every other day.
Jacob Adler. Have fun.
One tiny note, no his and her sinks.
And you don't think in the future you might want a his?
Oh my God, now we're talking code about my life.
OMG, I thought he'd never leave.
What are you doing here?
I've never really known how to live without you.
And it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
I'm having an affair with a married man.
You're not saying.
Oh, yes, I am. Turns out, I'm a bit of a slut.
I would like to propose a toast to your mother.
Out of nowhere, sudden appreciation.
Not totally out of nowhere, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God.
My love has no beginning.
I think this is very French of us.
Oh, my God.
I have a young wife, but I'm having sex with my old wife. My old, you know, ex.
And you don't know, you don't know.
That nerdy architect really likes you. You know that, don't you?
I haven't had fun in almost 3 years, Jake.
They must be hammered.
Something like that.
Hey, there's your ex-husband. Uh-oh.
And why so intense, big fella?
Let's see if we can make this work.
We can't, Jake.
How about this? Gray sweater, very old.
You have to keep that. It's cozy.
Okay. I'll meet you back in 30.
Mother! What? Whoa!
It's Complicated, a film by Nancy Meyers.
All right, It's Complicated, starring Meryl Streep, Steve Martin, Alec Baldwin, Lake Bell, Hunter Parrish, Zoe Kazan, Caitlin Fitzgerald, John Krasinski, Mary Kay Place, Rita Wilson, Nora Dunn, and Bruce Altman, written and directed by Nancy Myers. Start this off like we normally, that we usually mostly try to do. When was the first time you saw this movie?
Do you know, Sammy?
I'm not 100% sure of this statement, but I think I saw it in theaters.
Joseph?
I didn't see it in theaters, but I know I saw it when it came on DVD or Blu-ray. I can't remember which one was out at the time. It was just DVD or Blu-ray. I remember seeing it at home, and I've watched it again, and it was like watching it for the first time because I did not remember hardly anything about this movie. It's not saying that that's not the thing of saying the quality of the movie. It's just I forgot all about this movie, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. For me, this film came out on December 25th, 2009, so I'm pretty sure I saw it December 26, 2009 in theaters.
Probably true.
Yeah. And I can confirm I saw it in a double feature with Sherlock Holmes 2, the Robert Downey Jr. one.
That's not a bad double feature.
No. And it's also not the longest or weirdest day at the movies I've ever had, because there was one day after Christmas or Boxing Day that I watched Doubt, Valkyrie, and The Curious Case of the Benjamin Button in the same day, back to back to back.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, how did you stay awake?
Coke. The drink. The drink.
Okay. The drink. Sure. Yeah.
Do you remember our double feature we had? It was like the Friday the 13th remake, and I cannot remember the other one.
Oh god, I don't remember the other one, but I do remember the Friday the 13th remake.
I do too.
No, what I remember about this, I want to say this is my first introduction to John Krasinski, and because I don't actually think that I had started watching The Office.
I watched the first episode of The Office the day it aired, because I was very curious to see how it went, and I have seen maybe 4 more episodes of The Office since.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm team Parks and Rec.
I am too.
I would argue that Parks and Rec is better as a whole series, but The Office has its moments, and I think overall it was a solid series, but it massively declined when Steve Carell left.
Yeah, and somehow Parks and Rec mostly maintained quality, and also if you ever work for a municipal government, it stops being a hilarious, wacky comedy and becomes a horrifying, nightmarish documentary of your daily existence.
Like, none of this stuff is actually a joke. Yeah. This is what happens. Mm.
But I just remember, like, I remember seeing this film and thinking, like, he's kind of a bit character. Like, he's not a major character. And somehow he steals every scene he's in.
He really does.
In this entire film of heavy hitters.
Yeah, if you watch the supplemental material on the DVD or the Blu-ray, just about everyone is complimenting Krasinski. It's just like he doesn't even have to say a word, and he's doing the most memorable thing in the scene a lot of the time. and even though I watched the movie, even in that supplemental stuff, it showed a shot of, you know, Meryl Streep going outside to talk to Alec Baldwin's character, and Krasinski's just there taking the knife out of her hand.
Knife. Yeah. This is one of the best parts of that scene.
I think my favorite scene with him is where she realizes he knows.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what do you know? What did you see? I just saw that both of you got in the elevator. Then there was a kiss, possibly. And y'all went up there, and he had a heart attack. And the doctor went up there. And the chicken came back, thumbs up. Everything was fine. You know everything. He's like, nope, not really, no.
Mine's a toss-up between when he smokes weed with them.
Yeah.
And the following morning when he comes out in the clearly his probably his fiance's pajamas.
Yeah.
It was cold.
So now that we've addressed Krasinski, do we want to go ahead and address the other elephant in the room?
Sure.
just because I kind of feel like it has to come up at a certain point, but it did feel really weird watching Alec Baldwin in something with the whole Rust thing going on. And we're not going to talk about that. But I will say, this isn't necessarily the shout-outs, but if you go on YouTube and look up the channel Legal Eagle, which is a channel run by an attorney who... I kind of get into him because he would break down all of the crimes and how much time people would be doing in things like, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So many OSHA violations. But he also does a lot of stuff that's actual legal advice in a lot of famous cases. He will kind of do a breakdown of, here's what happened, here's what could happen, here's what this means, blah, blah, blah. And he did a really great breakdown of the early days of the Rust incident. So I highly recommend people watch that because it's,
yeah, he is really good. I watch him on a regular basis too.
Yeah. I watched him talk about glitter bombs last night.
The best one is where, he reviewed, My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
And he said, it's one of the most accurate movies and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Not the attorney, not the lawyer that's on our show, but one of the people that works for a law firm that's been on our show has said that their attorney father did make them watch that movie growing up because it's incredibly accurate. We should do that movie at some point.
I agree.
I love that movie.
That movie is so good. Marissa, I love Marissa Tomei in it, and of course you can't go wrong with Joe Pesci. Well, sometimes you can, but most of the time you can't.
I'm gonna stick with Joe Pesci has more hits than misses.
I agree.
Yeah, it's just, and I don't know how accurate that is, you know.
But I'm gonna agree with it anyways.
Yeah.
I don't have any objection to us doing that at some point.
All right.
Have you never?
I've never seen it. So.
Oh.
You're
in for a treat.
You're gonna love it. I'm gonna sit here.
I will. It's not like I've actively avoided it. It's just one of those things that just.
It has never happened.
Yeah. We have so many movies now, and it's just, there's a lot of things I haven't got to watch yet. It's just like, I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah. Contrary to what everyone seems to think, I haven't seen everything either.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Go ahead.
I was going to say, but I have seen Police Academy 6 an obscene amount of times.
Right. That's kind of where I was going, where I have a terrible habit of, because of whatever mood I'm in, just revisiting movies that I know I like already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's also, you want something that you know you're going to like, and also you want something that you have seen that you know you're going to like. So if you have to dip out of the movie for like 5 or 10 minutes, you know.
No harm. You pick up right where you left off.
Mm-hmm. So now that we've talked about everything but this movie...
That's what we tend to do.
Yeah, I know. One of us usually tries to keep us on track.
Sammy.
Yeah, but we're failing miserably today. So. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. John, why don't you give us a brief rundown
for I didn't write any one. Listener... Do you not remember the pre-show conversation? This part is getting cut out. I didn't write one, so let me find... let me find like an IMDb synopsis that we can use. I'm going to kind of circle back to the Alec Baldwin thing for a second while I'm doing this. But kind of circling back real quick to Baldwin, you know, like I said, it did feel weird watching this with everything that's going on. But seeing him in this role where he kind of plays the lovelorn character, which is something... I don't really know if he's done a lot, but it makes me remember what a good actor Alec Baldwin can be. But also, I've been on like this Oliver Stone kick lately that's been really weird. But if you've never seen Alec Baldwin and Oliver Stone's talk radio, Baldwin used to play the most fantastic pricks in movies, especially young 80s Baldwin. if you need someone to play an absolute ass in your movie, you can't do much better than him. And I don't mean that as an insult to him as a person.
No, he was although, just really good roles.
Yeah. And then it stopped being acting. So. All right. So basically the story of It's Complicated is it's the story of Jane and Jake Adler, a lovely man and wife that raised three beautiful children and had an incredibly messy divorce. And 10 years later, they think they've got it figured out, especially now that Jake is married to his mistress, Agnes, and has a hell beast of a child. Jane's a baker. She has her own shop, but she's also not dating, which means, as it comes up in the girl talk scenes, she's not having the sex. As her youngest child is getting ready to graduate, she and her ex meet up in New York for the graduation, and somehow he wines and dines her, and then they have the sex. This causes a reaction of Jane being conflicted that she's now the other woman, you know, in a situation where she's now the person that he is cheating on, the person he cheated on her with. Meanwhile, Jake loses his damn mind and falls completely back in love with his ex-wife. Meryl Streep is just enjoying the sexy time, but also is realizing that she does want someone. And someone does show up in the form of recently divorced architect Adam Schaefer, who is designing a thing for her in her house, which I know I watched this movie and I'm not 100% sure, but they were working really hard on it.
It was like an addition to the home, right? Like an upstairs bedroom and some other stuff.
Well, anyway, so she kind of falls for Adam, but she's also kind of in love with Jake, and the rest of this movie makes you, it does its best to make you believe that Meryl Streep is going to try to choose between Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin. That's the movie.
And
well, that was a synopsis of sorts.
Yep. So, real quick, Joseph and Sammy, could you take the R-ratedness of this movie? Sub question, did you know that this movie's rated R?
I remember seeing it pop up and it said rated R for smoking and sexuality. I was like, really? That's it?
Yep.
And I'm just sitting there like, this is why? And after watching it, it's like, this was easily a PG-13.
Well, as we kind of discussed, like, I didn't really have an, I mean, I think it needed the R rating? No, there wasn't the level of language. The sex was like really mild, frankly. But it didn't bother me because the subject matter is adult subject matter. And moreover, what person under the age of 17 is going to give a rat's ass about the subject matter of this movie? Yeah. Like, it's geared towards an older audience.
Yeah. It is, but I think the R rating just gives it a, it just makes it seem like it's actually dirtier than it actually is.
I'm gonna land on this. One, you're 100% right that the overwhelming majority of people under the age of 17, which is the quote-unquote age restriction for R-rated movies unless accompanied by an parent or a guardian, or, you know, assuming the theater doesn't give a shit about the MPAA rating system, it's just going to look the other way. Because, as I have gone on many rants before, a movie rating is just a suggestion, not an actual law. No, if an 8-year-old had wandered into this movie or bought a ticket for this movie, no one's going to jail. A ticket seller might get yelled at, but that's about it. If you call the police, it's a waste of time. But the MPAA... I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible, but, you know, it's story time with John. Also, I don't know how many of our listeners really understand how the MPAA came to be, So I think this is a good opportunity to talk about it and also fill time. So once upon a time, movies were created, and it was the wild fucking West. No restrictions. And then cut to this movie. The MPAA rates movies based on the taste of the times, for the most part. And they tend to like censor violence and sex in films in the 80s, and then just violence in the 90s. And then Rob Zombie and Eli Roth came along and beat them down. And they're just like, look, just do whatever. We don't care anymore. We're tired. Fuck, they had to sit through The Devil's Rejects 9 times. I think that's good punishment for them. A lot of times filmmakers can appeal. And I watched this movie, and I think had Nancy Myers cared enough, she could have appealed this down to a PG-13, because it's there's shit on network television racier than this. But
well, even at the time there was.
Yeah. But like we said, this is a film with a specific audience, and it's humor and a storyline based on that 50 and up crowd. So an R rating did kind of make sense. And watching the movie, it does have a pretty lax attitude towards casual marijuana use, which in the scheme of things is really not a big deal, but it's still illegal in a lot of states. Some of the conversations between the girls about sex did get a little close to TV-14 rated language. Like, I'm pretty sure, multiple scenes of them smoking pot and then having a conversation about a vaginoplasty is the reason this movie is rated R.
Right. And honestly, sometimes I think that they go for it on intentionally, right? Like they want it because they know the audience they're going for is actually going to be more likely to go see the movie if it does have an R rating.
Exactly. And there's actually a great example of that. There's a movie called Gosford Park that came out in 2001. There's a Robert Altman British murder mystery comedy that had that basically the entire cast was character actors. And it was written by Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey. And they intentionally put 3 uses of the word fuck into the script so that they knew they were going to get an R, because they knew no kid's going to come see this, so let's just get it an R rating and, move forward. So this is, but basically the point we're making is this is the softest of soft R-rated movies. Like, this isn't even a hard PG-13. Like, the Batman is what is being called a hard PG-13. This is just called, we took a rating because we know kids weren't going to give a shit.
Yeah, I kind of feel like The Breakfast Club earned its R more than this film did.
Yeah, well, there were multiple uses of the word fuck in the movie, and it also had some very... it had much more graphic sexual discussions in that movie.
Well, so, discussions around teenagers having sex too, even though they're teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird because 16 Candles had, had actual female nudity and use of the F word, and it got a PG. So.
It's the MPAA.
Sometimes I think that the MPAA, what they do is they actually have this like little, kind of like either a dartboard or they have like a roulette wheel. And whenever a new film comes in, they just get drunk and they throw dice to determine what rating the film's going to get.
Well, once upon a time, the film ratings made sense here because G just stood for general audiences, which G did not necessarily mean squeaky clean Disney. Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes, is a G-rated film. And it has nearly naked people, and it has, profanities that do make people around here upset, like, goddamn. But, it had profanity, violence, and near nudity in it, and it got a G rating. And it just meant that pretty much everyone is going to be able to get through this movie without any psychological damage. PG used to mean, this isn't necessarily family friendly, but it's not R-rated. So... PG was a catch-all rating because And PG-13 didn't happen until the 80s after Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where they're like, there needs to be a buffer between, you know, things that just any kid can see and the R-rated films. Because the original ratings were G, PG, R, and X. X became NC-17, and a lot of those X-rated films got re-rated as R because they weren't that racy. And then PG-13 was sort of a buffer, and it just, and then G somehow became, this is what Disney's going to do. So, and but you're also not far wrong, far off. That sometimes it is kind of a dartboard.
There's been many stories of like, well, I don't know what the hell they were. Why'd they want us to cut this scene?
Well, and also, if you're a major, film, you know, coming from a major studio, the MPAA is willing to work with you. But if you're a low budget indie, you're getting the rating that they're giving you. There's yet again another documentary worth watching called "This Film Is Not Yet Rated" by director Kirby Dick, and it is all about how the MPAA was working in the era of the Bush administration. The irony was that his own film got an NC-17. But it was also showing how any film with queer content was going to automatically get an R or an NC-17, whether it deserved it or not. And then, you know, you have guys like Eli Roth personally thanking Rob Zombie for his R rating for Hostel because they had to watch The Devil's Rejects 9 times before that movie got an R. And then you have films like John Waters' last film, A Dirty Shame, where they said after 15 minutes, we stopped taking notes. I understand the R rating in this, for this movie more than I do the rating for some of those WandaVerse movies.
Yeah.
So Steve Martin, we haven't really talked about him. And to go back slightly to the conversation we were just having, what person under 17 would have wanted to see this movie? Me, because Steve Martin meant, you know, hilarious comedy whenever I was growing up, so much so I was so disappointed whenever I rented Leap of Faith that was a drama. But
and he really doesn't have a whole lot of comedic scenes in this one.
No, it's
he really just plays the straight person in this one.
No, yeah, and his role is really kind of understated.
Yeah, I think had this movie came out in the, if you were to, he's like the Jimi Hendrix of banjo, and I'm not joking. He is as known for his contributions to the genre of bluegrass as he is to comedy.
Huh. I had no idea about that.
Yeah. You know how Dan Aykroyd is respected in the field of alien and paranormal studies?
Just pretend I do.
Well, Steve Martin is the opposite, where he's actually respected.
I was going to say, I know he's in that field, but I had no idea Dan Aykroyd was respected.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd is very, he is very heavily involved and very much not appreciated.
But, you know, that's kind of what I appreciate about this movie is, I mean, I don't know, I a little bit think it's underrated because not only did it have an excellent script, and I mean, I think it was very well directed, but to a degree, that had to be easy with the cast that they had. I mean, it was like it was effortless, all of them working together, and the movie just kind of.
Well, yeah, everybody was
made itself.
Everybody,
the cast they had.
They were cast very well, and everybody played off each other extremely well. Like, I don't think you had anybody that was not on their A game.
Yeah, I don't think know of anyone I would say particularly sucked in this movie, or. I mean, there are people that had way less to do than others.
Yeah, but that's not of their fault.
Yeah.
No, I would say if this movie had any flaw, it's that I can't watch it without wanting to eat.
Yeah,
like, right? The food looks so good, particularly that scene in the bakery where they're making the chocolate croissants, which, by the way, seems to me like the best date idea ever, especially if you're stoned.
Yeah. I'm not stoned. I'm just fat, and I think I texted you like I need like 6 of those now. what is it? That one guy I follow on Twitter says, "Diabetes, take the wheel."
Yeah, I will have to say, it's not just because I'm a sucker for a baking montage. By the way, I'm definitely a sucker for a baking montage. Yeah.
Real quick, Sammy, slightly off topic, but incredibly on topic at the same time. Don't watch the movie Chef.
Oh, yeah, don't. You'll be hungry the whole time.
Oh, God.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah. Like,
so good.
Like, I don't like pickles on a sandwich, and I don't like mustard. But I was hell bent on getting a Cuban sandwich.
Oh, yeah. I don't recommend Julie and Julia either, because that movie had me hungry the whole time.
Right.
What is it with Meryl Streep in cooking films?
I mean, she's been a chef. She's been an architect. She's been a chef. She's been a baker. She was a rock star for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it does seem like I can't describe it any differently than effortless. Like, she moves from one role to the next, and she always seems to fit every single role.
Well, she just has that talent where she can do whatever you give her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a part you can give her that she would suck at. She would find a way to make it work.
Yeah, and I loved something. I mean, and this kind of came through in her performance, but one of the things, it's an odd thing for someone, I would say, in our age group to appreciate, but I don't know why, I just kind of did. Towards the beginning of this film, I really like how they laid out, I don't know, I think she had a really good character arc. I like how they laid out kind of the situation and what was going on in her life. I can't imagine, it seemed really sad. Coming home to an empty house right after your last child leaves, you know, and then all of a sudden you're in this entirely new stage of your life and you don't really know what to do with yourself.
Oh, her youngest female child being played by Zoe Kazan, who was in The Big Sick, which is another movie that is fantastic and needs to be seen by everyone.
So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of neat because it almost played like a coming of age story for middle-aged people.
I think it's actually a really great breakdown of what this movie is.
Yeah, I would say that is.
Yeah, because the other way of describing this movie is the sad, pathetic lives of old, rich, white people.
I like my description better.
I think both of our descriptions, however, are pretty honest. The coming of age story of people in their 50s that are incredibly old and rich and white.
Okay, 50 isn't old, first of all.
I know, because I'm about a decade away from 50, so.
Oh, if you want to hear what Aisley has to say about being old.
No, we don't.
I don't want to hear how life is hard from a, how old is she again?
Seven.
From a 7-year-old.
Well, she doesn't consider.
I'm sorry. Speaking of their age, though, I do have to say something that a little bit bothered me about this film, but also gave me a severe respect for both of them. How in the hell did they not have hangovers after that night at the restaurant bar in New York? I mean, I understand she got sick that night, which made sense, but he seemed perfectly fine. And the next day, neither one of them seemed to have a hangover.
I have a theory. I think he just adopted in college a philosophy of you can't be hungover if you're still drunk. And he does what Sammy Hagar does. He just maintains a buzz all day. I'm serious. Like, Sammy Hagar is currently on some tropical island that he probably owns, drinking the tequila that he makes, and he's just like, "All right, I'm buzzed. I'm gonna go, sing some old Van Halen covers because that's how the people know me. And once I start to sober up, I'm just gonna grab another booze. You know, live my life."
I did like Alec Baldwin's character in this movie, though, more than I thought I was going to, because I could not remembering anything about this movie for whatever reason.
He
kind of stole the show almost as much as John Krasinski did.
Yeah. I mean, he really did. And you see Alec Baldwin on the cover, and knowing Alec Baldwin's career, you know, with the exception of maybe The Shadow and Beetlejuice, you just think, well, he's going to be an unlikable ass. And he's an ass in this movie, but at the same time, an ass you kind of feel sorry for, even though he's making wrong decisions left and right.
It is very true. And he does a great job of it. Like, he's an ass, but he's kind of a lovable ass, and you feel bad for him. But you also don't, because he got himself in this situation by cheating on his wife.
Yeah, but twice. He cheated this on leads two me, wives. With the other wife.
To, like, a little tiny mini-segment called What Was Alec Baldwin Actually Saying? And I'm going to give you a couple of lines, and I want you all to interpret them for me, because I have no idea what he was saying. The first being...
Are we manslating for you?
Yes. The first being, his argument for why they should continue having the affair is, you know how people in nursing homes with plants live longer?
I think that was just his dumb reasoning.
Yeah.
How does that make any sense in the context of what they're doing?
I don't think it's supposed to.
It's something that the old people are nurturing and watering every day to keep alive.
Okay, so their sex it's life is what they're nurturing and watering to keep them alive.
Yes.
Okay, so here's the next one. When he tells her he actually thinks that what they're doing is very French of them, what is that supposed to mean?
The French are horny.
And it's supposed to be sexy.
I can't.
Look, I've seen a lot of French cinema, both real French cinema and the American interpretation of what we think the French are like, and it's all the same conclusion. Rude and horny.
I was just wondering, because he specifically says that, which he says, very French of us, and he says, well, first I was sleeping with, I can't remember what he says, but like, I was sleeping with my old wife, and then now I'm with my new wife. But I'm married to my new wife, and now I'm sleeping with my old wife. How is that a French thing?
I'm just going to say watch more French movies.
Okay.
Just trust us. Do you want me to break down the French New Wave and the career of Agnès Varda for you for the next 30 minutes, or do you just want to move forward?
No, please don't. Okay. Please do not. Wait, however, following up on that, Meryl Streep's lines make 100% sense. Like, when the phone rings and they get interrupted, and he was like, don't answer it, and she says, I have to, I have three kids. I think that's probably one of the most relatable things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that was a scene that could have easily just been really cringy.
Yeah.
And it was actually really funny and kind of endearing a little bit, even though it has a really sad moment at the end, because Steve Martin's heart was kind of broken there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most of us would be heartbroken if we had up close, full frame shot of Alec Baldwin's dick, but.
And ass.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he bent over.
He did bend over. See, he saw everything.
Okay. So I want to back up really super quick and talk about something that I want to touch on that we've not talked about.
Okay.
Can we talk about what a terrible therapist she has? Like, don't get me wrong. I think that was a great scene. And I think it was incredibly relatable. I love the conversation she had about how she just wanted him to tell her the answer. Because I think that's the most frustrating thing about therapy is he said, let go, Jane. It can't hurt. Except for it can hurt every single person in your life.
Yep.
What kind of terrible advice is that?
No one's going to get hurt except for those absolutely the closest to you in this world and possibly wrecking a new relationship for you. But just those people.
I mean,
people.
He has to know she has children. How does he think that her having an affair with her father, who she's divorced from, is not going to have some serious psychological impact on them?
Yeah.
Which clearly it does.
Oh, yeah. Also, I just want to point out, they were really upset that their parents were having sex, that their parents were possibly getting back together, and they seemed kind of bummed that they weren't getting back together, but they got over really quickly.
Well, it's a lot to cover in 2 hours.
This is true.
I thought at the end with them, they acted like it was like, do you not understand how this affects us if y'all are going to get back together? It's like, I don't think it fucking matters to you. It's up to you. And two, and three, and y'all are all grown.
Yeah, but also we also did not see what their life was like while their parents were married. And I believe one of them even says they couldn't even be in the same room together. So you have nasty. That kind of relationship, and which has some, it does mess with kids a little bit, no matter how grown they are at the time. And growing up, it's still not easy. And I'm saying this as someone that has not been divorced or the child of a divorce. I'm just learning by observation.
Yeah, same. I can say specifically from my line of work that regardless of whether or not the child is an adult, it still has an impact on them when their parents get divorced.
Good point.
And also, they're all grown. And by being grown, part of that is telling someone you care about they're making a stupid fucking decision.
Right. And so speaking of the kids, while we're on the topic, I want to talk about their youngest for a minute.
Who we've covered.
No, I'm sorry, their son.
Oh, I thought the son was the youngest. I keep forgetting.
What do I say? Oh, who I you know is also affectionately deemed the white kid from Freedom Riders. Yeah. I don't even know if he had a name in that film.
If he did, it didn't matter.
No, this was probably, I want to say, I didn't recognize him at first from that, from Freedom Riders, and I'm pretty sure this was post me seeing that film, so I had a general sense of who he was. But I liked how all the siblings worked together, and I mean, I've been a fan of his. If y'all have not seen Weeds, I highly recommend it. It's an entirely different character for him. He is much more intricate part of the show, and
I saw the
it's
first
fantastic.
Season.
I like the show, and I got to the fourth season, and it goes completely off the rails.
This is true.
I had a hard time following after that. I was like, I don't know if I like the show anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that show was like started off really great, and then it got really bad, and it kept going.
Yeah,
I don't know if it ever got really bad. I just don't think it maintained how good it was. I think it took a dip.
The way it was described to me, it wasn't a dip. It's so much a plummet.
I did like those first three seasons, though. They were really good.
Well, I mean, I just like Mary Louise Parker in general and would listen to her narrate the phone book. And she was in this really great show, Once Upon a Time. God, what was it called? Oh, yeah, The West Wing. She was on The West Wing. Sammy, have you ever heard of that show?
And Sammy has left.
I have no words.
Oh, he was also in 17 again, the Matthew Perry, Zac Efron comedy.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was. I forgot about that.
Yeah. He was also in something called The Space Between, which I feel like was that one with the kid that was born in space?
Maybe. I don't know. I never saw it.
Me either.
Okay, I think I've covered most of what I have. I don't know if y'all have anything else to cover before we go into our segments.
No,
I want to bring up something that you texted me, and I want to see if Joseph agrees with you, that all of the scenes of the girl talk, which is incredibly accurate to what your girls and girls' nights are like.
Yes, extremely accurate.
Oh, okay. You want to see if I agree with her on that?
Yeah.
I would assume that's what it is, just because it was written and directed by Nancy Myers.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've been there for many girls' nights as the only guy. And not once has the subject of vaginoplasty come up. So,
but I can promise you it definitely could. And the accuracy, it makes a lot more sense given it was written by a woman. I think that makes a lot more sense, but...
Are you saying that men can't write women?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I am saying that men do not, and this is, hold on, this is a hot take. No one's going to see this coming. Men do not have a very good understanding of the inner workings of the female brain and or female relationships.
I think I've heard that discussed by every comedian from 19 forward to present day.
I think if you looked at history, all of history, we have a pretty good understanding. History shows that completely. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Now, I would argue women have a better understanding of the inner workings of the male brain and male relationships.
Oh, could you tell us what it is? Because we have no clue.
Yeah.
And that is exactly lost. Why we understand them, because y'all don't. So there's really, it's really just not, it's not that complex. No.
We spend our day, here, let me explain men for you. I'm going to mansplain men to you. We discuss in great detail cars, sports, or popular culture as a way to avoid any real feelings and emotions.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Did you see the game earlier, bro?
Yeah, bro.
It's very gamey, bro.
No, honestly, I think, that being said, I think it. There are men out there that can write women very well. That do actually have some understanding.
There's a great example. It was in this show, Sorkin wrote it. I think it was called The Left Wing or something. East Wing. God. Do you remember what that show was called, Joseph?
I want to say it was.
You're done.
It the Right Wing. It wasn't The Left Wing.
That's right.
I think it was The West Wing.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That show sounds familiar. Have you ever heard of it, Sam?
That's it. I quit. Maybe if I didn't have to watch a movie once a week, this show, I'd have time. Watch it this week.
Okay, I'm stealing that response for anytime anyone asks me, hey, John, have you watched The Mandalorian?
You know, I gotta watch a movie once a week. I don't have time.
I've got this one thing I gotta do every week. Do you understand how hard that is? John, you just checked in on Facebook that you were re-watching The Thing last night. I repeat, one thing to do, and it's very taxing.
Joseph, why didn't you do your taxes? Look, I gotta watch one movie a week. I don't have time for taxes.
All right. Well, I do actually think that you bringing that up is a good segue into a brand new segment that we have.
Okay.
That this film is the inspiration for, and any film that could even possibly apply, this segment's going to be a part of the show called Does This Film Pass the Bechdel Test?
Okay.
So, John, you want to explain for our listeners what the Bechdel test is?
Yes, me, a man, will explain the Bechdel test.
Well, I mean, you've been mansplaining this whole episode, so why
that's true. What is the trend on TikTok? Is like, is he mansplaining or is he just neurodivergent and just talking? but this did come up last night, and I agreed with Sammy that this is something we need to do. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to have to cut because I'm getting back to where. All right. So for those of you who don't know, the Bechdel test is a test created by Alison Bechdel, who is probably going to be best known to theater kids for writing the graphic novel Fun Home, which became a musical. But it was inspired by one of her comic strips where she and I believe a girl she was dating, a partner, or just another woman in general, were talking about how so many films were like male-centric, and if there was a female character, they were often the subject of, you know, there to talk about the man. I'm very badly explaining that, you know, and trying to give a very brief description. But there are three rules every movie needs to pass. There are three rules for a movie to pass the Bechdel test. One, it has to have at least two female characters in it that are named. Two, those characters have to talk to each other. And three, they have to talk to each other about something that isn't a man. It is incredibly easy to pass the Bechdel test. The bar is incredibly low. So when a lot of films don't pass, it's like, what were you doing? Also, what was your audience? Like, a movie like 12 Angry Men is obviously not going to pass the Bechdel test because that movie has I'm going to let you guess, 12 men in it. The 50 Shades trilogy, all three of them passed the Bechdel test. So it's not a perfect measuring thing, but it is worthy of still being part of the conversation. And a lot of people have said the Bechdel test is a great start to a larger conversation. So without further ado, this is going to be the only time I explain what the Bechdel test is. For any future episodes, Google exists. But It's Complicated does pass the Bechdel test. And it passed all three of the three tests. It barely did its job.
At least it passes, though.
Also, if the person who runs the Bechdel test movie list website is listening to this show, please make your search bar a whole lot easier to find. A corner or a sidebar would be nice, not at the end of a paragraph in the middle of your page. Well, also making your page mobile friendly would also be super cool. It's just a suggestion.
Well, the person that runs the Bechdel test is not going to listen to a man, okay?
That's probably true. Yeah. Alrighty, so.
Fun home.
moving into our normal segments, do y'all have a best or worst line?
We're not going to play Did John Like the Soundtrack?
Okay, we can start there. Did John Like
the Soundtrack? Creepy or Cromantic. We have other segments that come before best line, worst line. Also, what happens next?
Let's start with the Did John Like the Soundtrack?
I would have started off this movie as a no, but about halfway through, once they started smoking pot, Elton John and David Bowie entered the conversation. So, yeah. There's no official soundtrack that I could find on any of the streaming services. I found a Spotify playlist last night after the movie, and it has pretty much every song that was in the movie. And as a whole, yeah, I liked it. I mean, like I said, it's got Bowie and Elton John. What more did we need?
All right. I mean, I don't really have I guess there's a creepy or romantic moment. But it's, I feel like it was pretty obvious, so I was going to kind of skip it. But if y'all want to.
Yeah, sure. Most of the time our answers are obvious and we still do it. How we roll.
I would say our creepy or romantic moment of the film, which, by the way, I think this deserves a refresher. This segment is basically like any moment that it's a gesture or something done by a character that could either be considered creepy or romantic, depending on how it's received. In this particular case, I would just say the creepy or romantic moment is coming into your ex-wife or the person you're dating or whoever's bedroom when they don't know that you're there and just completely undressing.
Oh, that's just romantic right there.
And now this shall only be referred to as jumbly bits, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so now
I was looking for a new descriptive bit.
I think now we've approached the best line, worst line segment.
I got a line. I don't know if it's necessarily best, but it is the line that made me cackle. And it was as the doctor was checking out Alec Baldwin, and he is referring to his current wife, not the ex-wife he's sleeping with, that the Flomax he's on is reducing his semen, and that's bad for his ex-wife and bad for his wife. And Meryl Streep says to the doctor as he's looking at her, "Yeah, I require a lot of semen." Like, that was a line I forgot about, and I'm just like, that's hilarious. Because she did it so deadpan, too.
She did.
Well, I kind of already went over mine, but I definitely, hold on. I think my best line was just anything John Krasinski said. That pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
I have a line that really made me laugh out loud. It's the first time that Alec Baldwin and Meryl Streep hooked up in the movie. And he's just sitting there. She's freaking out. He just grabs her, goes, home sweet home.
Gross.
That's creepy, not romantic.
All right, worst line.
Well, there was another great line that we talked about last night, but we haven't mentioned, is whenever she asked if Steve Martin poked Smont.
Oh yes, I forgot about that. If he'd ever smoked Smont, which was one of my favorite scenes too, because just her reaction to the cops being next to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was so perfectly timed.
It's going in a vanilla latte. Dr. Ham on her eye. Oh, wait, that's a different movie.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but I kind of already mentioned it, but my worst line was definitely when the therapist said, just let go, Jane. What can it can't hurt. Yes, it can. Everybody she loves.
As much as I love crass humor, I think that the vaginoplasty conversation was stupid. It's not necessarily bad. It was just dumb. Particularly the line, I heard about a woman who went without sex so long it closed back up.
Yeah, I don't think it works that way. Yes. I'm gonna, in case y'all were unfamiliar with how the female body works and our anatomy, haven't heard of that one.
Well, we're going to introduce a new segment called Too Much Information with John. And this is actually a problem for trans women who do get the bottom surgery. They have to use devices called sounds to make sure everything doesn't close up.
Right, and that's a logical thing. I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That could happen, but.
But not from the problem they were coming up with.
Right. I would say I haven't heard of it from the standpoint of I'm trying to think of how to put this delicately.
A cis female?
Yes, a cis female.
Assigned female at birth?
Correct, right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't heard of that particularly being an issue. But who knows? It actually could be.
Yeah. We'll never know.
So, Joseph, did you have a worse line?
I was trying to sit here and think about one. Those two things that y'all said was actually pretty, yeah, I would agree with y'all, but I didn't have anything that really just stood out to me that was just bad. Like I said, I thought all the dialogue, for the most part, was pretty good.
All right, so I guess it's time we moved into our second to last segment, which we just recently renamed, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. So, do y'all have anything good we have not discussed?
Okay, so this is... My answer is also going to be a question to you, Sammy, because I know what you like in movies. I kind of appreciated that this movie kind of has a happy ending where she doesn't necessarily walk away with either man. Like, she does break... So it's kind of a bittersweet ending, even though I do think that the ending could create another conversation in another segment. But my question is, how did you feel about the ending, you know, with her basically not getting the guy? Because after getting a face full of Alec Baldwin junk, Steve Martin did say, I don't think we should do this.
Okay, so to answer your question, I kind of have three categories of the way that I feel movies handle this. I have an appreciation for any ending, even if I don't like it, if I feel like it's earned, right? If I feel like you really got me there in a realistic way and it makes sense, I may be mad at you about how it ended because I wanted a happy ending. But like Titanic, for example, I know it is kind of a dumb example, but I forgive that movie its faults and the fact that we don't technically get our happy ending because it makes sense, right? It's earned. And
I would just say go ahead.
No. So this movie to me has a very cathartic ending. It makes perfect sense. It's incredibly realistic. Had she ended up with Alec Baldwin's character, I think that would have felt totally inauthentic. It wouldn't have made any sense. This made perfect sense. This was just like a snapshot in this woman's life of a of a moment that she went through that was very interesting. So they could have handled it several different ways. I think she could have ended up with Steve Martin, which I don't think would have been, I mean, it would have been fine. It wouldn't have been, I mean, I don't think it would have bothered me, but I love the way they did this ending, because the other way they'll do it sometimes, which I don't like, is it's kind of hard to explain, but they'll just sort of botch it. What I love that they did with this one is they went through the process. The ending was very earned, even though it was a happy ending for her without it being a happy ending in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. But what I also loved is they left it open for the possibility of her moving on, right? By having mm-hmm. Steve Martin's character come back there at the end, the implication is that they have a second chance, right? That she has an opportunity yeah. now to move on with someone else. And the audience gets to decide if that happens or not. I think that's great. I have no issue whatsoever with that ending.
Okay. Because I only ask because I know you're a huge fan of the happy ending, but I also know you're a fan mm-hmm. of the earned ending as well. And also, a good example for a dumb ending would be Sexy Dancing for a Brain in a Jar.
Yes. Yes. Just
putting that out there. That's somehow still alive. And voiced by Paul Walker.
That's not an earned ending. That's just a dumb ending.
Is it even an ending? Is that something we needed? But we're not going to talk about right. Tammy and the T-Rex anymore.
So was that your good?
That and we never really talked about Lake Bell. She is the other woman, which is, you know, Alec Baldwin's current wife. I kind of felt... I have no problem with the girl talking shit about her because she was the other woman that wrecked the, you know, life of our main character. In her life with Alec Baldwin and the things he was doing to her life, I did feel bad for her. And also, I like Lake Bell. She's been in a lot of stuff, you know, she's been in a lot of stuff over the years. Currently, she is the voice of Poison Ivy on DC's Harley Quinn animated show, and she is a great ironic use of the word straight woman to the wackiness that is Harley Quinn.
She is. She's really good in that show.
Mm-hmm. And I still need to see that movie that she made where she was the voiceover actress.
It is really...
Yeah.
In a world?
Yeah, in a world, yeah. I still need to see that.
It is a really good one. I think you'll really like that.
Mm-hmm. It's just another one of those. I just hadn't gotten to it yet. But, yeah, I think I'm good.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings on her. Like, on the one hand, I do a little feel bad for her. But, I mean, it's so limited. I think she does a good job with her character. Her character is someone you'd love to hate. She's not particularly likable, but to me, it just comes down to the fact that she had an affair with a married man. And so she had the naivete to think that he wasn't going to do the same thing to her. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't really feel bad for her. You know, it's kind of like, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. Well, and also I feel bad for her because from the movie standpoint, they give her almost nothing to do other than stand there, look sexy, and then tell Alec Baldwin she's ovulating. Yeah. That's really her only contributions to the movie. Like, we don't even really see the demise of her relationship with Alec Baldwin. We just hear him tell it. And I know that could have added another 5 to 10 minutes to the movie, but, you know, it's just kind of like the last time we see her, she's ovulating. Cool.
Although, no, at the party... where she kind of saw that, I think she rejected Alec Baldwin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you saw it in her face. I was like, that actually, I kind of felt bad for her on that one because it hit her right then and there.
Yeah.
So, there's... you know, I understand why you wouldn't be too upset about it, but the look on her face, she was just like, I know how this feels now. I thought that was really good.
Like, you feel a little bit of it,
but not a whole lot.
Yeah. I just kind of wanted to see her throw something at him. That's all I kind of really wanted. I know it's a cliche in movies, but I kind of wanted the cliche.
All right, Joseph, do you have a good?
I honestly just liked how Alec Baldwin, his character, was just giddy like a teenager through the whole movie. It was almost a whimsical teenager. Like, nothing you said was going to get in his way or bring him down. He was just happy the whole time, and I thought that was pretty funny. It was kind of charming, too.
Yeah,
I don't have anything really bad about this movie. I actually kind of enjoyed it. Am I saying it's like a top tier movie? No, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it's just the movie we did last week, whatever that was, it was a tight 95 minutes. And I did appreciate that.
Mortal Kombat Annihilation, for the most part, knew what it was.
Yeah.
It didn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, it did.
My only complaint is that for a movie of this length, there was not enough John Krasinski, and I don't know to take that up with, but I did not appreciate it.
Maybe Nancy Myers can do a This Is 40-esque sequel about him and Caitlin Fitzgerald's character.
I would not. I'd hate it.
All right.
So I think we're ready for the big question.
I think we have one more.
Going to be this week.
I think we have one more question to ask before we ask the big one. What happens?
I'm
going to
pretend
next?
Like I know what it is. So go for it. Oh yeah.
We talked about it last night. We literally had this conversation.
Okay. I've slept since then.
That's a good excuse. I have to give it to her.
You're just trying to side with her so she forgives you for last week.
I've got a lot of...
That's not good enough.
I've got a lot of...
All right, John Joseph, what happens next?
All right. In my mind, Street rebuilds the friendship with Steve Martin as they're building the addition to the house. And halfway through, he approaches her and wants to give a second chance. And... they go back to the bakery for more croissants, and then they do it on the counter in the bakery, which is highly irresponsible, but also kind of adorable. Meanwhile, Alec Baldwin's character gets divorced from Agnes. She moves on to a yoga instructor played by one of the Hemsworths, preferably Chris. And his character is like a lawyer or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He enters into a age-appropriate, but also mildly irresponsible love affair with his new paralegal. So everyone's happy.
Well, I am tempted to agree with everything you just said, minus the going to the bakery and making love on the bakery counter, because that belongs in the too much information section, and we did not need that specific detail. And also, the Alec Baldwin, I think what happens is they get divorced, not before finding out that she's pregnant. So now he has to... So now they have to deal with that in the midst of their divorce. And she does happen to go and marry someone age appropriate. It's super annoying who he doesn't get along with. Meanwhile, his oldest daughter, they get married. They have a kid. And yes, that's how I'm thinking. What happens next?
Joseph's answer is some portals to Outworld open.
Shao Kahn comes down. No, I'm just playing. Honestly, I think y'all covered everything I could have ever thought of.
And more.
Probably. Although, I will disagree with you. I think the counter scene should be on there. And if we're going to go for the R rating, we're going to go for the R rating, okay?
Yeah, nope.
Yep.
We're going to go for it. We're going to push to the NC-17.
All right. Would you accept the floor of the bakery?
So on that note... On that note, Joseph, John, did y'all survive? Because I'm certainly not surviving the sequel.
You just have no appreciation for...
Look, it's really complicated. It's going to make $1 billion at the box office, and you're going to be mad that you weren't on the ground floor.
Okay, sure.
Just putting that out there. Joseph, why don't you go first?
Well, did I survive this? Well, it's kind of complicated, but but no, I really did survive it. It's a fun movie. It's a cute movie. And like I said, there's very little to not like about this movie. It's just, it may not be a breezy 2 hours, But it's a fun 2 hours.
So I feel about this movie the same way I did back in '09. I very much survived this film. I believe I have gone on record that I am something of a possibly low-key, medium-key Nancy Myers fan. Having revisited two of her films for the show, The Holiday and this film, I think I slightly prefer The Holiday to this one. They're both really strong, really fun, cute, light, but also dramatic comedies from a woman that has been in the industry since the 80s and knows what she's doing. And every time she makes a film, I'm like, well, this is going to at least be enjoyable, you know? So, yeah, I definitely survived this one.
24 hours later.
Well, shocker, I survived.
I'm so shocked.
Yeah, I survived the movie. However, I did not survive how many times you both have made that It's Complicated joke.
Well, it was so easy.
But, no, I really like this movie. I don't know what it is. It's one of those movies I can just turn on at any time, any point in the movie.
So it's your Rocky IV.
This week, this film had a super low bar. So.
It didn't even have to. God, just think, we could have done Sleepaway Camp 2.
Right. The bar was literally laying on the ground.
All it had to do was, like, barely step over it.
Yep.
Yeah. It didn't necessarily have to be foot.
Yeah.
The bar was kind of, like, sinking to the ground.
Well... This movie didn't have quite a hill to climb, but I wonder about what we're doing next week, and it's my pick.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I'm not going to go as vindictive as Joseph. But Sammy's not going to be completely happy, because while we're not going foreign, we are going black and white.
Oh, why? I thought next week was... Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
I played around with the schedule a little bit because it's my pick, and I wanted to do something, you know, fun, filled with murder and musical numbers and men wearing women's clothing.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it also sounds like a Thursday night at Joseph's house.
It kind of does, actually.
Yeah. But we're going to go back to 1959 next week, and we are going to be talking about one of my favorite movies, and I believe one of Sammy's mom's favorite movies, Some Like It Hot, starring Marilyn Monroe and Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis.
Okay. Can I remind you that Joseph is the one that picked Mortal Kombat Annihilation, so you just not have to punish me. I didn't do anything.
Actually, Joseph's probably going to think of this one as a reward.
I think I am, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to ask you a question about next week's movie now, Sammy, but you can't answer until next week.
Okay.
Because I want to see if you agree with me on this, but does this movie have the greatest ending line in cinema history?
I'll find out. For some reason, I think I actually know what it is, because I think I've heard this about the movie before, but it's escaping me. I can't remember what it is right now.
Well, we're going to save it for next week. So, before we wrap up, anybody got any shout-outs?
No, I'm good.
I guess shout-out to the... for anybody listening now, it's already happened. So, shout-out to the Bengals and the Rams, because it's going to be an interesting Super Bowl.
An interesting Super Bowl, because we're not invested with either team, really.
Correct. Yeah. No, I mean, I think both teams have a story. Like, I actually just saw a meme that showed Matt Stafford and Eminem and said, with Eminem playing and Matt Stafford playing, this is the closest Detroit's ever come to the Super Bowl.
Damn.
Which is unfortunately very true.
Yep. All right. I've got another TikTok shout out real quick. I'm gonna try to keep it brief, but I don't do this intentionally. Like I wasn't going searching for pop punk bands, but this is the latest on TikTok to come across my my FYP. And shout out, this band's from Texas. But it is a four-piece pop punk band called House Parties. They have a four-track EP called Tiny Rooms. I checked it out. It's really, really good stuff. And for all of you old school emo fans on your way to get the Emocron variant at When We Were Young, they did a cover recently of Jamie All Over by Mayday Parade. So that's also worth checking out. I promise the next one I'll try to find a metal band or a rapper or a country person. Just not all emo bands. I swear.
I'm actually gonna throw down the challenge. I'm going to challenge you at some point to find a country music artist that you would want to shout out off of TikTok.
Okay, I got one. We'll do it. I actually have two. I'm going to choose from for next week.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
I was just like, it seems more
difficult. That's going to be more difficult.
Well, I love pulling from all different genres. It's just pop punk is really just kind of the ones that have dominated recently. But I do have two country artists I can choose from. I have a couple of metal bands. This may surprise you. I have several more pop punk emo bands I could probably pull from as well. But next week I will do one of the country ones, and I'll do one of the more serious one of the two. How about that?
Nice. Okay.
All right. But that's next week's problem for John, and also Some Like It Hot is next week's problem for Sammy and Joseph. You just keep doing this. You just keep doing what you're doing.
I'm really good at that, so I'll keep doing it.
All right. Well, Sammy, Joseph, thank you for doing another episode. Listeners, thank you for coming back. And until next week, we promise it won't be so complicated.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by The Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Who's got the reefer?
Keep walking, please.